The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
Welcome to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm Brad Bannon. I'm a national Democratic strategist and a columnist for The Hill in Washington, D.C. And by the way, if you want to read my columns in The Hill, you can check them out on the web at muckrack.com, that's muckrack.com, /Brad-Bannon. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. BannonCR.com is the sponsor of today's show. If you want to reach me on Twitter, find out more about my political polling company, or if you have any ideas for Deadline DC, my Twitter handle is at Brad Bannon. This week on Deadline DC, our guest in the first half hour is Paul Liznick, legal and political analyst for WGN in Chicago. Then on the provocative progressive political panel, our guest today, our former Obama administration official, Will Giuondo, and activist Mark Grimaldi. First, we have a clip from the former lawyer of the former president, that's Michael Cohen, and his former client, Donald Trump.
If this goes to trial, will you testify against Trump Org executives or the founder?
If they ask me to do so, absolutely. I've already given them my word. You know, what's interesting is in your earlier segment, you made a statement that, you know, obviously Allen has not been charged yet and there's no conviction yet. But you could rest assured that bringing in a guy like Mark Pomerantz in the DA's office, and you know this so well, Ari, as a lawyer yourself, bringing in the DA's office, now combine that with the attorney general's office, the chance that there's not going to be indictments coming out and there's not going to be convictions. It's kind of like me waking up tomorrow 7 feet tall and playing power forward for the Knicks, right? It's just not going to happen. It's there, right? It's going to happen. I think Donald Trump is going to flip on all of them, including his children. Huh. I really believe that Donald Trump cares for only himself, and he realizes that his goose is cooked. So when he turns around and he gets questioned about what you're just asking about, inflation, it wasn't me. It was Allen. Wow. It was my accountant. It was the appraiser. It's never Donald.
That was Michael Cohen, former President Trump's former lawyer. Our first guest today is Paul Liznick. Paul has been the political and legal analyst for WGN-TV in Chicago since 2008. He is the host of The Political Report on WGN-TV every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock Central Time. He interviews the leading political figures in Chicago, Illinois, and in the United States. Paul has appeared on a number of TV news networks, including CNN and Court TV. He is the author of 13 books, including his new book, Assumed Treason, which you can see in the background of the picture there. Welcome back to Deadline DC, Paul. It's always good to have you.
Always good to be with you, Brad. Thank you.
Let's start with this. Can you talk about the history of the New York Attorney General's investigation of the Trump Organization? It took a turn last week when the Attorney General announced that the civil investigation had turned into a criminal investigation. Can you talk about this history, please?
So the reason you're seeing the shift in the history is because when Donald Trump was president, most things were really sort of on hold. We know that based on Department of Justice rules, you can't indict a sitting president. So there was just not a lot to go with that. And the New York State was doing its thing, but they weren't about to do anything while he was in office either. And so now that he's out of office, that put things back in high gear. And you do have the U.S. Attorney's Office in, the Attorney General's Office in New York. And a lot of what they were exploring are essentially civil problems. Did he not pay his taxes? Did he inflate the values of things? All these kind of things, which, by the way, if he did, he wouldn't be the only business person to ever do that, right? So did he inflate things or not pay proper taxes? But most of that was civil investigation, meaning it was pretty much expected that when all was said and done and whatever the conclusions are, he'd be hit with a fine, or the Trump Organization would be hit with a fine. What happened last week is that, and we don't know anything for certain because we're not seeing these documents. They do have his taxes now. But when they brought in the other entity to basically say, we're seeing criminal violations here, what you now have is the New York Attorney General. Those offices are working together. One is civil, one is criminal, but essentially saying you need to come in here because there may be criminal violations going on. And the key news is the Trump Organization was put on notice with a letter saying, you need to know our investigation is no longer just civil, it is criminal. And on that aspect, Michael Cohen is right. To think that this all ends basically with a, we thought there was something here, but there isn't, we're closed, that could happen, but it's not likely.
Now, I imagine if the investigation proceeds and they find evidence of wrongdoing, there would be a trial. And I'm just trying to imagine the media circus when a former president has gone on trial. Now, maybe you know the answer to this, Paul, but I was thinking, has a president ever been, ex-former president ever been on trial? I know an ex-vice president had been on trial once, Aaron Burr, but have we ever had an ex-former president go on trial?
No, I mean, Nixon would have been the closest, right? Had he not done what he did and they dropped things, you might have seen a trial there for President Nixon. But no, we're living in a time of history where history is being made. But here's the other thing I think people need to understand, Brad, is that even if they did decide to indict him, first of all, Cy Vance, who is going to be retiring at the end of the year, he's the guy that's going to be making these decisions. And some are saying, this could go on into for another year before decisions are made. I don't think that Cy Vance, who's opted to retire and not run for re-election, is going to simply turn over this investigation to somebody else, to some new attorney general or some new office in New York. So I think you're going to see this decision before the end of the year, and he's going to make it. But as far as when there will be a trial, I mean, look, you saw even in the challenges when Trump was president, there will be so many efforts to take it to court, to get courts to rule, to work its way under the system, that we literally could be a few years away from what would ultimately be a trial, with challenges to information, and that's presidential privilege, and just on and on. And even though you might look and say, that's not presidential privilege, the point is, it doesn't mean it won't have to work its way through the court system and get challenged. So we're quite a while away from any kind of a trial, if one was to ever happen.
Do we have any kind of idea at all what kind of criminal violations that the Attorney General and the Manhattan DA are looking at, or is that completely shrouded in mystery?
No, well, it's a bit of mystery because we don't know, but it's pretty clear from what they're looking at. If you're looking at somebody's tax returns, you're talking about tax evasion, you're talking about fraudulent conduct done with regard to reporting taxes, paying taxes, all of that. So we know pretty clearly it's in that world. I don't think that based on the financial documents that they've been looking at for the Trump Organization, we're going to find out, it's a kidnapping charge. I mean, no, that's not what's going on here. It's going to be tied to financial shenanigans, and probably in the tax world, and probably in a twofold way: not paying taxes that should have been paid, and also claiming larger deductions than should have been claimed based on the value of the property. What Michael Cohen tells us is there were times that Trump would say a certain building was valued at, $1 billion, I'm making that up, $1 billion, when having a low number was going to help him in terms of paying taxes. But when it came time to maybe taking a loan against that building or something else, now it's worth $6 billion. That's the kind of shenanigans I think they're looking at.
Yeah, well, it's certainly my guess is we'll see. But my guess is this is something, if you're right, is going to play out over a period of years. So anyway, our guest in this half hour is Paul Liznick, who is the legal and political analyst for WGN-TV in Chicago. You can watch his weekly show, The Political Report, at 9 o'clock Central Time every Sunday on WGN, where Paul interviews the leading political figures of the city, the region, and the nation. We'll be right back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon after these messages. So don't go anywhere. We've got more with Paul. Then in the second half hour, we have our provocative progressive political panel. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our radio audience. If you're listening, but you want to watch the show, in addition to listening to it, you can watch us on Periscope.tv at Periscope.tv/Brad Bannon. You can also watch us on Facebook Live at tinyurl.com/BB Facebook Live. And finally, you can check us out on YouTube at tinyurl.com/Brad on YouTube. Our guest in this half hour is Paul Liznick, who is a legal and the legal and political analyst for WGN-TV in Chicago. Let's switch topics, Paul. Last week, the United States Supreme Court agreed to hear a case on a very restrictive Mississippi anti-abortion law. You can tell us more about it, but I believe it essentially forbids the Mississippi law, which the Supreme Court has agreed to hear, would end abortions after 15 weeks, which is well below the Roe versus Wade standard, which I think is 22 weeks. Why don't you explain it? You'll do a better job.
Well, so you're right. The law under Roe means a woman has 22 to 24 weeks to have an abortion. After that, it would become illegal. But what happened in 1992 was a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and that changed the standard, provided the test for how abortion restrictions would get evaluated by the court. And that test is, does it present an undue burden on a woman? So ever since that time in 1992, various cases have worked their way up to the court with certain things, you know, being an undue burden, certain things not being an undue burden. Well, the Mississippi case actually had been brought up several times, I think 12 or 14 times to the justices, and they kept turning it down. You need four justices to say we'll hear it before they will hear it, and they can hear anything they want or not. What's triggered this, I think, clearly, is the loss of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the replacement with Justice Amy Coney Barrett, because you now have a 6-3 conservative majority on the court. Barrett has made her views on abortion fairly well known. It doesn't mean that she will act on them in this case, but there's a sense that she probably would not preserve the right to abortion and find in favor of Mississippi. So what various states have been doing, Brad, and this is typical of a lot of states, they pass these laws for the purpose of having them be test cases to test Roe and try and get the court to overturn Roe. Now, we know that Clarence Thomas has already said he would vote to overturn Roe, but are there five votes on the court to do it? My answer is this. I don't think the court will overturn Roe, but they don't have to. All they need to do with each case that comes up is simply say, pursuant to Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that's not an undue burden on a woman. So they could look at Mississippi and decide in a 5-4 vote, and that allows Chief Justice Roberts to vote with the liberals, which he's done in the past on this and other social issues, to basically say, yeah, no, it's 15 weeks is a reasonable and not undue burden. Well, then, of course, you have the next case coming up that'll be from Texas. I shouldn't say the next one, there'll be others, but Texas is just passing a law now, just passed it, signed into law, which says no abortions after 6 weeks. And apparently some women or many women don't even know they're pregnant until that 6-week point. So some would argue it essentially does away with abortions. The bottom line to this is everybody who's sort of waiting for the court to simply overturn Roe, I think is waiting on the wrong bus. what you really need to be recognizing is the court is going to continue to whittle, as long as it's conservatively dominated, whittle away and whittle away at that right until essentially there's just nothing left. They don't have to overturn Roe and reach that result.
So it sounds to me like one avenue for the court is to overturn Roe without actually overturning it, which may have the same.
What would happen is if they find in favor of Mississippi, that means Mississippi can keep its law. Right now it's on hold. They can keep its law, no abortions in Mississippi after 15 weeks. Then what you will see is every other red state essentially adopt that same law, because now the Supreme Court has granted their permission to that. So that's what you will see, a wave of 15-week cases, and then you'll see the next group, the six-week Texas-type case, as those work their way up and they see whether the court will take yet one more standard, which is why, by the way, as a side point, there's a lot of reporting that Democrats are pressuring Justice Stephen Breyer, who's now the oldest member of the court and liberal member of the court. Please retire. Please let Joe Biden appoint somebody to replace you who can be 50 and stay around for a long time, like the conservative justices. Breyer apparently is not open to that right now. He says he's worried that it looks political. But then again, he also saw what happened with Justice Ginsburg, who also thought she would stay around and have a Democratic president replace her. That didn't happen, and it upset the balance of the court in an incredibly major way.
Well, you know, one thing I've learned about Washington, D.C. for all my years is no one gives up power willingly. It's very rare for anyone to give up power willingly. What do you think that Justice Breyer will do? Do you think he'll retire this year to give Joe Biden a chance or appoint a replacement? Because if he doesn't and the Republicans take control of the Senate in the midterm elections last year, the new president could have a tough time getting a new nominee passed the Senate. Do you think Justice Breyer is open to that kind of argument?
Well, I think, well, listen, by the way, you're right that nobody wants to give up power, but let's remember that Justice Anthony Kennedy, that apparently his decision was often based on being talked into an early retirement. He was ready to go, but maybe not. Well, anyway, the bottom line with Breyer is he doesn't have to retire this year. As you just said, you know, the real risk, and Democrats really do need to fear losing control of the Senate. And this is just about the Senate. The House doesn't matter when it comes to Supreme Court appointments. But, you know, as it is now, it's only 50-50. So if I'm Stephen Breyer and I'm wanting the Democrats to at least maintain that liberal seat going in the future, he probably has another year where he can retire, because you see, as long as Chuck Schumer's in control, you won't have to worry about the Mitch McConnell games of, oh no, 11 months isn't enough time, even though for Ginsburg 3 weeks was enough time, you know, and all that kind of stuff that got played. You'll have Chuck Schumer, I guarantee you, if something would happen to Breyer with 3 weeks left in a before the midterm elections happen, he'd get that justice appointed by the court. So yeah, I do think Breyer may reconsider his thoughts. But remember, we also don't know what the future holds, right? You know, nobody expected Scalia to pass away when he did. So as a young man, so you never know what could happen. It's an unknown world. But you know, he wouldn't be the first president to not appoint a Supreme Court justice. That's possible.
Let me ask you one question. Let's say the court does what you suggested it might do, which is say that the Mississippi law passes constitutional muster. Democrats will pitch that as, you know, overturning Roe versus Wade, even though it technically may not be. Republicans, on the other hand, it may energize you know, Republicans who are very concerned about the issue. What do you think would be the impact in the midterm elections next year if there is the Supreme Court does act?
It's a great question, because, and I think you're right, look, if you look at the 2020 election and basically say that President Trump energized Democrats to such a level that, you know, that turnout was amazing for Joe Biden, and he beat President Trump, because I do stand in the camp that says Biden won the election. It was not stolen. But you're also right. Republicans may say, this is what we were after. We've got that majority. We have to keep it. So we're going to vote too. The bigger problem at that point, Brad, will be these election restrictive laws that are getting passed around the country. And so, yes, I do think it would be energizing for Democrats if the court finds this law constitutional. But the question is, will they be able to hit the numbers they hit in the past with certain restrictions being in place?
Paul, I want to thank you very much for joining us again today on Deadline DC. I know you're a very busy man. Check out Assumed Treason. I assume you can buy it on Amazon or some like website. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Brad.
Welcome back, Deadline DC. We're going to start the half hour off with a clip from President Biden talking about the need for police reform.
My fellow Americans, we have to come together to rebuild trust between law enforcement and the people they serve, to root out systemic racism in our criminal justice system, and to enact police reform in George Floyd's name that passed the House already. I know Republicans have their own ideas and are engaged in a very productive discussions with Democrats in the Senate. We need to work together to find a consensus. But let's get it done by the first anniversary of George Floyd's death.
That, of course, was President Biden talking about the need for police reform. Tomorrow will mark the sad anniversary of George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis. The murderer, former police officer Derek Chauvin, has been convicted of murder, but police violence against Black Americans continues. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. often said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I hope more than anything that he was right. But sometimes I wonder, as police violence against African Americans continues. This half hour is brought to you by my company, Bannon Communications Research, which polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. Our guest on the panel today is Will Giuondo, who is a council member at large in Montgomery County, Maryland. Will is described as the progressive leader we need by the Reverend Civil Rights Activist and Congressman John Lewis. Will served as Associate Director of the White House Office of Public Engagement and as an advisor to the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, in the U.S. Department of Education. You can find Will on Twitter and Instagram at Will Giuondo. That's WILLJAWANDO. Joining Will on the panel is progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. Mark has worked for several Democratic presidential candidates, including Joe Biden. He is also active in campaign finance reforms and efforts to promote cancer research. His Twitter handle is Mark J. Grimaldi. That's Mark J. G-R-I-M-A-L-D-I. Welcome to today's panelist on the Provocative Progressive Political Panel. Will, tomorrow is the anniversary of the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. I'd like to say that has put a spotlight on the question police violence against African Americans, but it seems to me almost every week you hear about another example of that. What do you want to say to mark the sad, tragic anniversary tomorrow?
Well, thanks for having me. I've been reflecting on this a lot, and I think two things come to mind, at least initially. One, the work continues, right? In the memory of George Floyd, of Breonna Taylor, of Fanon Burhe here locally in Silver Spring, Robert White, Sandra Bland, go down the list, too many to count. The work continues. And for George Floyd's daughter, who, told President Biden her dad changed the world, he did change it. But we need to continue on. You mentioned Dr. King's quote, it bends towards justice, but we have to bend that arc. We have to do it ourselves. And the second thing that occurs to me is just how deep and systemic these problems are. It goes beyond individual officer action. There's certainly an issue with who we hire and what they do, but the entire system gives us these outcomes. There's no accountability. There's no transparency. The fact that we found out about Mr. Green, Ronald Green, who was killed 2 years ago, and we just got the photos released He died before George Floyd, begging for his life, apologizing to the police officers, was dragged from his feet by ankle chains, was beaten to death. And the fact that we're just now hearing about it just shows how deep-seated the problems are. And we have to, you don't fix a 400-year-old system that started with slave patrols in the South, which is the origins of our policing. You don't do it with one bill. We do need to pass the George Floyd Policing Act, but this is going to take a long time and a lot of action and sustained effort to get it done.
Okay. Tomorrow on the anniversary, I believe members of the Floyd family are going to visit Joe Biden at the White House. It seems to me that that's a great way for the new president to shine a light on the problem. There's also the House has already passed, I believe, a police reform bill, which would increase police accountability. But like everything else that passes the House, it's in limbo in the Senate. I believe Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey has proposed a police reform bill, which he's working on with Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. But I believe the key issue that is impeding progress in the Senate is the provision that would end limited police liability, which I think is part of the House bill. How do you handle that in Montgomery County? You're a local elected official, Will. How do you handle the police situation in Montgomery County?
Well, we've been working since before last year. I mean, I tell people I've been working on criminal justice reform for much of my career. And as soon as I got on the council, the first bill I introduced was the Law Enforcement Trust and Transparency Act, which created independent investigations when police kill a resident. That's now law. It's become state law. The state took our lead. We passed a landmark use of force bill, which many of the federal bill contains many of the same provisions, banning chokeholds, banning shooting at moving vehicles, limiting no-knock warrants. We raised the standard of when deadly force can be used from reasonable to necessary as a last resort. So we've taken local action, and that's still going to be required. There's 18,000 police agencies in the country. The implementation, even if the federal incentives are right, which we need the federal law, we need the federal purse strings to say you should do X, Y, and Z. But the implementation, who are the local leaders doing it? What are the local laws in the context is still going to be very important. So we're a little ahead of the federal government, like many other jurisdictions, but there's so much more to do. And we need the federal government to help create that economic and, you know, legal framework at the federal level. So that's going to be helpful. But we've started that work and we will continue it. In fact, this week, just last Friday, our police union sued us, the county, because of the use of force bill that we passed over last summer. So that's the other thing. You still have institutions pushing back against these common sense reforms. Don't strike someone who's restrained. You know, that would seem to be pretty basic.
Okay. Mark, what will you be thinking of on the anniversary of George Floyd's tragic death tomorrow?
I think that his daughter is right that he did change the world, because I don't recall a time where I saw so many people, regardless of where they are, what walk of life, different neighborhoods, different races, different genders, who came together and marched and risked their lives. I mean, let's not forget, during a deadly pandemic, right, to go out and get involved, because they realize how important it is that people's lives are literally on the line. And I know in any movement, it's hard to carry momentum sometimes from the moment something happens, but I think you're seeing it being carried and you're seeing people requiring justice. And thankfully, we've seen the minimum amount of justice with Derek Chauvin, the former officer, being convicted of second degree murder. But I think that's just the beginning of that individual case. And now we need to do what Will is talking about, what you're talking about, Brad, which is to see it on local and state and federal levels. And that's what I'm hoping we're going to start seeing some action from Congress.
Okay, we're going to break now, but when we come back, we'll have more of the Provocative Progressive Political Panel with Montgomery County Councilman-at-Large Will Juwondo and our own executive producer, Mark Amaldi. About President Biden's Build Back Better program. Now, there are two parts to the program. There is the first part of it has to do with infrastructure, the web, web availability, bridges, mass transit, highways, refurbishing schools. Now, the president originally proposed a package that was, I think, $2.2 trillion over 10 years. The Republicans countered with a package that was just under $600 billion, which is a wide gap between the two. Last Friday, I think, the Biden administration responded and said they would drop their request as part of a compromise to $1.7 trillion, which is about $500 billion short of the original proposal. But I believe at least a couple of Republicans in the Senate have rejected that. First of all, Will, why don't you tell us why local governments like Montgomery County need that?
Well, it's critical, and I am very hopeful on this that whether there will be some compromise, of some amount, a significant amount of infrastructure, but look, we have been hit very hard over these last 15 months. Before that, income inequality was raging. In addition to the infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our ports were in dire need of rehabilitation. We have several projects across the state and in Montgomery County that are ready to go right now. The Purple Line, various tunnels, bikeways, roadways. We need to
Purple
make our
Line
streets
is
safe.
Part of the Washington area subway system, right?
Yeah, as well as the subway system. It will interface with it. It's a light rail that'll interface with the Washington subway system, which also needs work. And so it's that kind of nuts and bolts, pun intended, infrastructure is really important. But also, childcare is infrastructure, making sure women who have been hit the hardest in this pandemic, who made up all of the job losses in December, 156,000 women lost their jobs while 14,000 men went back into the workforce. You just think about how staggering that is. Childcare is a big part of that. And we need to make sure that if they can go back to work and continue to contribute to the economy and others and other guardians. That's an example. But we have to have this robust schools, right? We have a ton of schools. We're the 14th largest school district in the country. We have so many projects. Every year we have to make tough decisions about who goes first, who gets delayed in our capital budget. We just wrapped up that process. Imagine if we could rebuild all our schools that are 50 years or older here in the state and across the country and give them high, broadband and high-tech infrastructure. That's a real, and then we need to green our economy, right? And all the jobs that it could create while we convert our building codes and make them more efficient and reduce our carbon emissions. So all that is infrastructure and will put America in my state and our county in a strong position. That's why I'm excited about it. I hope that we can, we won't get everything we want in this bill. It'll be compromised, but it can have a dramatic, dramatic impact. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to realize that sometime in this year.
Mark, what do you think about the president's package? Do you think we'll get a substantial part of it, or will he have to compromise to get Republican votes that bring the figure way down and what's way below necessary, probably?
Well, I don't think you have to look too far back to see what the approach will be, because if you look at the American Rescue Plan, the president and the Democrats were willing to work with Republicans and try to bring them on board, and you're seeing it now. But I also think that there's a certain line that they will not cross, which is to water down the bill so much that it will not be a transformative piece of legislation. Now, what exactly that number is or what exactly those portions of the bill are, I don't think that's crystal clear just yet because they are still negotiating. However, I think there's a higher chance that you have a transformative bill with just Democrats than you having a watered down bipartisan bill, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think President Biden is willing to sacrifice the whole point of the bill, which is to transform those items that Will was talking about, our infrastructure, our economy, and to save the planet, for you know, lack of a better term. I mean, that's a huge issue. We just had the a report come out last week that keeping the climate to 1.5 degrees Celsius or less, which you need to do to maintain our planet's livable status in the future, the opportunity to maintain that number is closing. So we need to act aggressively, and this is the bill to do it with, I believe.
Yeah. And I would just, add, Brad.
Go ahead.
That, you know, this is the time to do it, you know? Yeah. So we're really, you know, if you got only two things done in your administration, stopping COVID, passing the rescue plan, and passing this type of infrastructure bill that's transformative, that would be a successful presidency. And, you know, and knowing we don't know what the midterms are going to look like, we don't know, you know, how things are going to go. And so I think, Mark is right. There's going to be this line that we shouldn't cross because we need to get it done. Now, that being said, we still need to negotiate with, you know, Senator Manchin all those other folks. But we need 51, you know, we need 51.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, Will. I've always thought, I wrote about this recently in one of my columns in The Hill, that if normally midterm elections don't treat the president's party very well. After 2 years of Barack Obama's first term, the Democrats took big losses in the House, and the Republicans took big losses in the House after the first 2 years of Donald Trump's term. Now, I think I agree with you, Will, that if the economy is revitalized and if we've recovered from the COVID pandemic, and I think we're on the path to do both, Joe Biden, the Democrats will do better in this midterm elections than prognosticators believe. Nice. Speaking of the midterm elections, let me ask you one last question. The Supreme Court last week agreed to hear a case on a Mississippi law that places restrictions on abortion. It basically would make outlaw abortions once the pregnancy is more than 15 weeks alone. Now, Mississippi is not the only state to pass this kind of law. Texas passed an even more restrictive anti-abortion law last week. If the Supreme Court decides to accept the Mississippi law as constitutional, that will make it difficult for any woman to get almost any kind of abortion in the South. Do you think that this will help if they overrule Roe versus Wade or restrict it? Do you think that will help Democrats in the midterm or help Republicans, since this is lively to galvanize the conservative fundamentalist Republican base?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think on the political analysis side of this, there's probably a little bit of both, that would happen. I do think, though, it would, you know, be devastating to the current president and to women's health and ability to determine what they want to do with their own bodies. The fact that the court is taking this case, it looks like they are going to poise to restrict reproductive rights in some form or fashion, if not completely, or make it so narrow that you go to, you know, dangerous situations, effective ban on abortion. And it's just so troubling because time and time again, we need to be focusing. We just talked about infrastructure, things that are going to support women and families. Those are the things that reduce abortions. No one likes abortion, you know, as far as like it's a tough decision on for anyone involved. How do we support women, support families so that they have more choices and better health care? And it's just really unfortunate, but it looks like we're heading that way. And it might give us some short-term political gain, but it's unfortunate.
That's it today for Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I want to thank our guest, Paul Lisnick from WGN-TV in Chicago, Montgomery County, Maryland, Councilman at Large, Will Juando, and our own executive producer, Mark Grimaldi. Be safe and be strong. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Will. Take care.
Thank you, Will.
Good
to
see you.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, you too.
Enjoy the Memorial Day weekend.
You too. Stay safe.